Welcome to C-Suite Radio.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Idly hey!
Welcome to another episode of The Brett Allen Show.
Prepare to be astonished!
A pop culture podcast. Join Brett weekly as he interviews your favorite celebrities from film, television,
I'm back in business, baby!
Comedy, and much more.
Inconceivable!
Plus, you never know who will stop by.
Dude, we are so gonna party!
Now, here's your host, Brett Allen.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of The Brett Allen Show. Today, we are chatting with veteran actor Ronnie Dean Blevins. I was going through your IMDb page. You have a lot of movies that are out or coming out. I think the most recent is Father Stew, which is just a fantastic film. But you've been a very, very busy individual. Thanks for hanging out today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks for having me, man. I checked out some of your episodes. You got some good guests.
I do. Well, you're on that list for sure. I know you're, again, as I mentioned, you're very busy, but you've just been, this last year has been nonstop for you, it seems, for projects. Like, you've been really, really busy, which is a good thing, I think, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, the pandemic came and, you know, obviously it shut things down. And then, I thought during that time period that when things got back up and running, there'd be a little bit of a renaissance. And that's kind of exactly what happened. So it's really been just nonstop since things got back up and running. So
how does that work? Do you just go from project to project pretty much, or do you work on one, stop on another, and then start on something else? Because as I mentioned, you know, sort of jokingly, but you've got three or four movies here that are either out or are on the way out. I mean, how does that work for you specifically?
You know, no actor is really working, I mean, and save for maybe a tiny percentage, just nonstop. And even when you're on a show, you're working for, you know, even if it's like a network show, you're working like 8 months on and a few months off. But for me, I have been away from my home a lot in the last year and a half. You know, I worked on a movie called Emancipation, a Will Smith movie, and yes. I was on that for about 6 months. Now, we had shut down for a little while, and that shot in New Orleans. And you know, I have a wife and a 5-year-old, so it's particularly hard to be away from them. You know, obviously very grateful for the work, but and then I worked on that for 6 months, and then I was back in January, and then I left again in February to do another movie for a month. And now I'm home for about 2 or 3 months until I leave to do a show. So I would say that's pretty standard for someone who stays pretty busy. Even then, you're probably working maybe like 50 to 60% of the year, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, I have a 7-year-old, so I get it.
Oh, wow.
You know, just always going nonstop. Of course, as you said, you know, it's great to have the work. But then what maybe a lot of people don't get is that you're gone for like large blocks of time, especially when you're on like a major motion picture. Like, you could be gone for very extended periods of time. But Father Stew is the one that I've seen the most recently. You have a fun part in that movie. I mean, and it's just an all-around great story as well. How did you find out about that project, and what sort of interested you in being a part of that story?
Well, Father Stu, you know, it was something that that was one of the first things that came up during the pandemic. So I hadn't worked in about a year, and
okay.
And that was just, you know, an audition that came through, and it interested me because it was Mark Wahlberg and Rosalind Ross is the director, and she's you know, she seemed to be a very, very smart woman with a sensibility towards you know, interesting storytelling. And then of course you have you know, Mark Wahlberg and Mel Gibson and just a really great cast in there. And and you know, it's a faith-based film, and I think that that's always a very noble undertaking, specifically if you can tell a story in such a way that's not being didactic or preachy, but relatable. And that's exactly what I haven't seen it yet, but I'm just judging it. We're having a premiere this week, but that's what I believe it is, you know, based on the script. Now, it's not a big part in the movie, but there was a period of time, again, when we weren't working. So when things started coming in, opportunities started coming in, I just said yes, 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 because
yeah,
so long. But you know, I'm really excited about it, and I think it's going to be something really cool. Trailer looks great.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a fantastic film. I tried to get a screener of it from the studio, and they shut me down.
Oh, really?
Because I really wanted to watch it.
Oh.
Sometimes I get screeners, and sometimes I don't. It just depends. But in any case, it's funny that you say that. A lot of people were saying yes all the time to everything that was coming down. And I saw an interview with a comedian recently where he was in the same situation, and he just said yes to everything. And then later on found out he had, like, 400 shows booked, and it was like a 2-year tour that he had committed to.
Wow.
Without really thinking about, like, what he was doing, because he just was at home all the time, you know, and just was eager to work. Some people were saying, like, that's the first time they hadn't had a job since they were like 17 or 18, because nobody really knew. But I'm so glad that you were able to do work, you know, during the pandemic, and also a lot of great things too that came out. The Conjuring, you did an amazing job in that movie.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a really good film. Like, I watched it a couple different times because, and it was at that point when I reached out to your team to see about getting you on the podcast, because I wanted to talk to you about that movie. And then, of course, you know, life was going on and things were happening. But our moments now, I want to talk about this because you've played a lot of different roles in your career. Like, you've got The Conjuring, which is like on one side. And then you have all these other roles that you have played, different characters and things like that. When you are given a role, or you audition for a role, or let's say you get it, like, how do you get into the headspace to create that character, especially when you're coming off something that's, like, so markedly different? Let's say The Conjuring, because that was a very interesting character, to say something like this, or to anything else that you have chosen to be a part of.
You know, I just usually there's enough time to cleanse your palate. Now, The Conjuring 3, okay, we had actually shot a while ago, and then it was shelved for reasons that I can't quite remember why it was shelved, but it was supposed to come out like a year prior to that.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I don't really have a problem doing that. I think The Conjuring is kind of a thing of its own, because you know, I was playing a real guy, you wanted to be very, very sensitive to how you portrayed the man, because the man did die, right?
Yes.
I mean, the whole case is based on his murder. So, you know, I got the sense that when we were shooting that they were kind of, how would you say it? They're kind of gearing away from having this, you know, he might have been a little bit, to be honest with you, I wonder if the guy might have been a little more abrasive in real life than we depicted in the movie. But because we had the responsibility of playing the guy who actually lived and was murdered, and we're telling this story, we kind of wanted to maybe you know, water down the depiction of him. You know what I mean?
Sure, I've heard that before. Yeah.
So that was kind of a thing of its own. I was just full on excited because I'm such a fan of the first two Conjuring movies, you know. And then from that, I went to, you know, there's a couple other things in between, and then I went to Emancipation. Now that was a real tough one, because I'm playing a bushwhacker in the Civil War. Who's on the wrong side of history and facing down our protagonist, Will Smith. Now that was a tough one to kind of enter into and exit out of, because it was just such a heavy, just the worst time in American history. And we're telling the story about it. And then we show up to these battlefields that are almost transporting you into time, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, I tell you, there were some dark days on that, because, you know, you always try to, even when you're playing the bad guys, you know, they say the villain is just the hero of his own story, right?
Yeah. Like, there's gotta be humanity to it, because if you ask that person's mom or dad or whoever, they would probably say,
yeah,
he's a great kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's exactly right. So, but when you're playing someone like the guy I played in Emancipation, it's a lot harder to find that, you know? But you have to, because if you sign up to be a part of telling that story, and to truly do it justice, you can't pull any punches, you know? So that was a lot harder to shed, just because of the nature of the story we were telling. So
as I'm looking here and just thinking about the projects that you've done, you play a lot of really cool characters, you know. Thanks. What I'm saying? And again, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like I've seen most of your films of recent, and even just going back and like looking at clips from other things that I know that you've been in, it's just interesting to watch as a storyteller or as an actor, how you kind of like are able to shift, you know what I'm saying? And then sometimes you play these really intense characters, or we're talking about The Conjuring, you know, the Devil Made Me Do It. It's like, okay, now I'm playing a real person who died as a result of nefarious or whatever happened.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go, okay, now I have to kind of switch out of this. And, you know, I don't know if you do a buddy comedy maybe next or whatever the case might be, you know, now you're like playing the lighthearted sidekick, you know, or something silly like in Lethal Weapon or one of those television shows, you know? So it's just fun to watch.
Well, you know, The Conjuring, on the set of The Conjuring, they kind of, you know, they bless the set before everyone shows up on the first day. Not before, when everyone's there on the first day, they bless the set. But I think that people on that movie kind of take the lore pretty seriously. So there is kind of a creepy, you know, if you talk to Vera Farmiga, she's pretty vocal about like the experiences she's had on set, you know?
Yeah.
And then Patrick is a little more kind of, you know, takes things at face value. So I think that if you went into a movie like that being a believer and had some sort of experience with something other than the physical world, you know, spirits, ghosts, which I had and have, then it hits you a little differently. But if you never really had an experience with it, because I equate to, you know, you're probably less inclined to be open to it if you've never had an experience with it.
Right.
You're more inclined to be open to it if you have. So I think that, you know, I think people's experiences ran the spectrum on that. But that was a little weird, too, because it was just creepy, you know?
Yeah, it was a little dark, but it was interesting. You know, you said something interesting about people who are believers, who have some sort of faith-based things in their life. It's interesting because I you know, having been had that part of my life in the past as a pastor and things like that, and working with youth and dealing with all these different things, you know, that's the one thing that you could never argue somebody out of a corner was their experiences. You know what I'm saying? Like, and if you have people that have those experiences in their lives, you can't take that away. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
I think that's why this movie, The Conjuring, or even Father Stu, you know, even though it is a sort of a faith-based film about somebody, but, you know, I think Mel Gibson said in an interview, you know, when you have that title on something, people kind of, the faith-based community, I guess, kind of is expecting something, but really this film is not about that, because the Father Stu was a very hardcore person, but, you know, super solid all the way. I'm excited for people to see that film. And if they haven't seen The Conjuring 3 or any of the other one, Death in Texas, that cool poster that you have in the background.
Thanks, man.
Another great film. One last question here. I know you've had a very busy day, but I want to ask you, what was it that interested you in becoming a storyteller, Ronnie? Like, when did you know that this was something that you wanted to do?
I was probably about 9 or 10, and maybe I was a little older than that. And I remember I had watched a Spike Lee film. I could be wrong with the age, but I was young. And I believe the Spike Lee film was, it might have been She's Gotta Have It, or Do the Right Thing. It might have been Do the Right Thing. Let's just say it was Do the Right Thing. And I was watching it a lot on cable. And then I remember going to the library at school, and I saw a book, a Spike Lee book, and in the book, it also had pages from the script, right?
Okay, cool.
So, and then I went, to Blockbuster, even though it was coming all the time, so I could pause it. And I remember it blowing my mind how I could see the script and I could see the words they were saying, when I would watch it, and then I'd pause it, I'd look at the script, and I was like, it was such a kind of a peek behind the curtain in the mind of a young boy. So that summer, my parents bought me a VHS camcorder, and I started making movies, you know, with whatever I had in my room, like Attack of the Killer Guinea Pig, you know. But that was just kind of something I did as a hobbyist. And then it was something I didn't really think about until after I graduated college, and everything kind of came full circle, and I just had the impetus to move out to Los Angeles without really any background. I mean, without other than just being a hobbyist as a kid who loved movies and making my little movies, you know. But I still had no background in acting. So I'd say I was about 21, 22. And I think the smartest thing I could have done when I moved out to LA was, I just asked around where the best places to study were. I picked one, and I really spent my entire 20s by just learning. I didn't have any expectations, I think that really saved me, because I was able to get a job and just say, okay, listen, I'm just going to learn this thing. As long as I love it, I'm going to keep the pursuit, keep up the training, and try to really hone some sort of technique, and that's what I spent my 20s doing, and it was really a great time, because as I suspected I might, which obviously was the impetus for me moving to Los Angeles, I loved the process, and so I loved the process of learning, and I spent many years learning, and so you know, I'm still a big process guy, so that you know, it's for me, it's always the preparing for the work and the actual work is infinitely better than any, than watching it or going to a premiere, you know, that's all cool. But the real magic, I think, is in the doing. So, that's a long, long winded way to answer.
No, I think it's great. I mean, for anybody that has not spent time on a film or television set, it is a process.
Yeah.
Because what you see and then what you experience are two totally different things.
Right.
I did a lot of stand-in and background work in New Mexico on a lot of shows, and I've seen how it works. And like one or two scenes could take hours or days, you know, sometimes. Television's a bit different because they usually knock those out in like 5 or 6 days usually, but, and they're on top of each other because as they're filming, one's coming out or two's coming out. So it's a lot of work, but you've done so many cool things, Ronnie. Again, I will put a link in our video and audio notes for people to just check out your work, and excited to see Father Stu and all the other things you've got coming out. And
let me know what you think about Father Stu when you watch it.
I will. Yeah, I will for sure. And shout out to your team at Studio Matrix for making it happen. Yeah, Ronnie, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you, man. Be well.
That brings today's show to a close.
Goodly-do.
Thanks for stopping by. If you enjoyed the episode, feel free to share it with a friend and subscribe. It's absolutely free. The views and opinions of the guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
Autobots, roll out.
Go home.